clock down. That's Lou time. Shot doesn't go. JV, how about that? He's been a monster early tonight.
Jonas is somebody we feel is a part of our future. And I think Jonas will get better, you know, like, and he's going to fight to be playing in the fourth quarter.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
All right, welcome to Free Association. I'm the aforementioned Dave Zarum. Right beside me, J.D. Bunkus. How you
We're
doing, J.D.?
Back!
Welcome back to the show. It's been a while, a few weeks. Seems like a few months.
It really does feel like a long time.
If you need an explanation for the hiatus... From what I hear, JD, you were out in the Amazon taking ayahuasca and finding yourself.
How'd I was. That go? It was actually really good, but it was peyote, and I had a fantastic time. Had a vision quest, found myself.
Found yourself.
Yeah, a lot of exactly. Raptors thoughts, a lot of deep Raptors thoughts I have for everybody.
Well, today. I can't wait to hear them. You know, I don't think we missed too much while we were away as far as the NBA and basketball world is concerned. But there's some big Raptors news that came down, and we will talk about that
literally
on the show today. Big in stature, big in dollar amount. We'll get to all of it. We're going to have a mailbag coming up. Looking forward to that. A new game that
more
I can't wait for.
More of a mail satchel.
It's a bit of a satchel. It's a light one, but that's okay. A game I'm really looking forward to. We're going to talk Canada basketball. Of course, Raptors. But let's get right into it. I mean, the big thing while we were gone was the extension for Jonas Valanciunas. 4 years, $64 million. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, real quick for me, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer on both sides.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, the first thing that you kind of hear is that he's the team's highest player next season, which is a little bit jarring right off the bat. But if you actually look at it from a logistics standpoint, I love this deal. I haven't really heard a single person that's been down on it, and
for good reason.
you're not going to get one here. I just think that by comparison, when you look at what kind of money was given out this offseason?
Well, that's the thing, and I want to get to that.
JV, this deal just looks really good. Let's start with Enes Kanter, for example. He signs basically the exact same deal, but 4 years, $70 million. And yeah. I know it was because of an offer sheet that Portland threw at him that Oklahoma City had to match. But give me JV at $6 million less. I still do believe his ceiling is higher than Kanter's. Kanter might be a little bit more polished offensively right now, but... I'm a JV guy, and you look at a guy like Tristan Thompson, who's looking for like over $90 million. He's looking for a max.
Well, hold on. I like where you're going with this. Let me just toss out some numbers from this summer, because I think the best way to evaluate the Valanciunas deal is to put it in context.
For
like
sure.
You're saying. So Kanter gets $70 million, a little bit more than Valanciunas. Tyson Chandler from the Phoenix Suns got 4 years, $52 million.
More established player. He's earned that money.
A
but
better
yes.
player now, 4 years from now, who knows? Greg Monroe, 3 years, $51 million.
Basically the same money.
Who else we got? Robin Lopez, 4 years, $54 million. So that's slightly in the same ballpark. I mean, a couple million a year off for a player who I think Valanciunas, especially when you talk about potentials, leaps and bounds.
And when you speak about offensive upside, it's not
exactly.
The same universe.
So compared to the other centers signed this summer, I mean, that Valanciunas deal looks very, very reasonable. What I've been saying about it is that, you know, obviously you're banking on him to get better, right? But even if he doesn't...
I hope.
But if Valanciunas next season is the same guy we saw last season, just in terms of production, you know, never mind minutes, we'll get into that. But just in terms of production... That's a reasonable contract for a guy who's a big presence down low, giving you that 13 points, 9 rebounds or so. And then you factor in the fact that I'm pretty sure he's going to be getting better.
I totally agree with you. And when you speak about if he was just the same guy going into next year, if you look at what his offensive efficiency was like last year, and again, he did have limited touches because of the offense, but his offensive efficiency was great. He was one of the highest in field goal percentage in the NBA. His rebounding rate is terrific. Mm-hmm. He's very good in both categories. He can score and he can already rebound the ball.
He's top 5 in rebounding rate.
Yeah, exactly. Like the guy, if he was given a bigger workload, he would be able to handle it. That's not what the Raptors have asked of him so far. If you look at, say, what guys from his guys kind of comparables that have been. His comparables get a lot more minutes than he does. They get a lot more burn than he does. If you look at guys like Vucevic, they play about 6-7 more minutes a game than JV has. They obviously get fourth quarter time. Same thing with Greg Monroe.
More touches as
Same
well.
Thing with Andre Drummond. All these guys are getting more touches. They're getting more minutes. JV, when you look at his numbers spread out over 36, it resembles a lot more of what these guys do. And yeah, that's what I mean. When you look at what the Raptors have asked from him in terms of scoring, he, if they were to, say, lose DeMar DeRozan to a season-ending injury this season, I think that he would immediately step in as the number two option on offense.
Yes, and I think he could. Like, we've seen him against other centers, and they haven't been able to stop him. When the Raptors make a point of getting him the ball
and
down
this
low.
Year, we won't see the likes of, if DeMar was or Kyle was to go down, where we'd see the likes of the scoring load going more to a Lou Williams or to a Gravis Vasquez.
Yeah, there's not that off.
It would fall a lot more onto JV's hands. And this is the other thing. I think we're going to see a lot more of JV this season. There's no Amir Johnson. We have to remember this in all of this. Is that you're going to see his minutes extrapolate a little bit without Amir. They're going to have to trust him more. They're going to really see what he can do.
That's a great point, too, because I think the other center they signed, this Bismack Biyombo.
Bismack Biyombo, and they also brought in Luis Scola.
I really don't think Biyombo's going to get a ton of minutes. He's going to be a situational kind of player.
Yeah, we'll see what we get out of Biyombo. I remember before we left our last podcast, I spoke
really
about
like
it. I'm very high on the signing, but I'm mostly really high on it because I think it's so low risk. Like, they didn't give Biyombo any money, basically, and so whatever they get out of him is going to be pretty solid. And in terms of a big that can defend, that's the one area where I think people are most concerned about Valanciunas. I think that's the area where you have the least concern about Biyombo. But let's talk about the defense a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, Valanciunas has said he's been pretty honest in his assessment of himself. He said that, you know, what I need to get better at is defense and quickness. And if you've seen the work he's been doing in the offseason, it's been a lot of footwork stuff, a lot of kind of explosiveness training, if that's a thing. So I think he knows what his weaknesses are. He knows where he needs to get better. And that's a great sign for someone going forward. That doesn't mean the deal's without its questions. Oh, but first, listen, before I forget, coming up soon in the show, we're going to have Marius Markevicius. You know who that is, JD?
Yes, I do. He is the director of the Other Dream Team.
Yes. So the very cool documentary about the Lithuanian national team in 92. It's also kind of about JV's rise. So we're going to talk to him a bit later on to get
very cool doc. Very
some
cool doc.
Insight into Valanciunas the person. But back to the basketball court, you know, you mentioned it a few times. Do you have a problem handing out a fairly long-term, fairly big money deal to a guy who we haven't seen playing those fourth quarter minutes? We haven't seen getting those touches. I mean, you're making a lot of assumptions to say that he's going to be more involved.
So,
right?
So this is why I have no problem with it. One is that, like, it's not like the Tyson Chandler deal where Tyson Chandler, you've paid for what Tyson Chandler has already done.
Yes.
With JV, you're paying for what you think can be. And
yes.
And I love that. You're getting a player that's going to have his prime years in a pretty cap friendly contract. So no, I don't really have a problem with that, especially. Think of the alternative if the Raptors were to say, hey, we're not going to re-sign JV right now.
Well,
and they went into a future without him.
Yeah.
And they were going to say, so DeMar DeRozan's going to probably command max money. He's going to be a free agent. That's going to happen. Kyle Lowry's only got a couple of years left on his deal. Mm-hmm. And hey, like, honestly, I love Kyle Lowry and I have full faith that he's going to bounce back, but he has to prove it at this point.
Yep.
If you look at the Raptors' future right now, JV is a huge part of it. And if you take JV out of that equation, it looks a lot bleaker to me. So at this rate, yes, I'm very happy with the deal. I think that I don't really have a problem. I don't think that what they gave him is absurd. Like I said, it really makes sense financially when you compare it to other guys that are in his ballpark. The defense should concern people a little bit. Like his 105 defensive ranking was abysmal last year.
105th?
His 105.6. That was his defensive ranking.
Okay.
It was one of the worst rankings amongst big men last season. He really has struggled on the defensive end. The one thing I'll give him credit for, though, which I don't think a lot of people do, is that, yes, out in open space and on the pick and roll, he has struggled. But you and I have talked about this before. When he's guarding guys down low on the block mm-hmm. and he's asked to face another big man who likes to play with his back to the basket, that likes to grind it down low, JV has shown that dancer's footwork that we're going to talk about a little bit with the other dream team that they talked about a little bit.
If Valanciunas' mother had her way,
he'd be a dancer.
He'd be a dancer.
Yeah. And what a glorious dancer he would have been. Could you imagine going to a dance competition so you think you can dance something? There's this 7-foot big Lithuanian guy. But yeah, no, I'm just saying that, like, he has been, I think that for all the criticism he gets for his inability to defend in the pick and roll, and like I said, I'm not going to defend it. I'm not saying this excuses it. He's been very adept at guarding other bigs, and he's shown an ability to defend on the low block and
now,
be a bit of a help defender.
The counterpoint to that, and I am with you on that, but the counterpoint to that is that in today's NBA, air quotes, that those opportunities are going to be fewer and fewer to guard other bigs who are kind of
Sure.
Crashing down low.
But one point I really loved, actually, was brought up by our very own Eric Smith, was talking about, like, hey, everybody talks about Golden State Warriors in terms of them playing the small ball, but they wouldn't be where they are without Andrew Bogut.
And also, the Cavs showed for at least a couple games.
Like Mozgov.
Mozgov. They had no answer for Mozgov. Let me toss this notion out to you. I was talking about this on the Sportsnet Magazine live show this past Saturday. So let's say JV doesn't get substantially more fourth quarter minutes. Let's say down the stretch, Casey elects to go with Carroll at the four and Patterson.
Scola probably, or Patterson.
Scola or Patterson at the five, okay? Even then, I mean, I was just thinking of, like, you know, like how, like, a starting pitcher and a closer. Like, what's the value of a guy who gets you to that position to win, who brings you till, you know, who helps you for three and a half quarters to put you in a position to win, and then you bring in someone else? I mean, there's still value there.
Listen, we talked about this, that with this roster, what we really liked about it, what we really liked about this offseason was that they got more versatile. That what they were able to do was make it so that they have more rosters and more lineups, with this roster. And so, yeah, ultimately, do you want JV playing in the fourth quarter? Yes. Like I said, I do believe that at some point, this guy has the potential to be the Raptors' number one scoring option.
So this is a four-year deal. Yep. I think next year I expect to see a slightly more involved, slightly improved Valanciunas. What do you think you're going to see from him 4 years from now? Like in that last year, that contract, what kind of player are we seeing?
I truly believe, I'm going to go out on a record and say this. I truly believe
40-20?
No, yeah. I thought, oh, that's without a question. No, but I do think that in those 4 years, he will have an all-star season. He will make at least one all-star team. You look at the depth of the position, the way that the NBA all-star bracketing is now, where they actually make it centers, or sorry, where it's forwards. I still think he's going to be able to get in. Like I said, you look at his low post game is already very refined. He's got a very nice game. We know that righty hook is devastating. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of guys can stop it. I know you have a lot of faith that we're going to see a little bit more pick and pop with him this year.
I think we're going to see a lot of 16-footers. 16-footers,
yeah. You think he's going to really expand his shooting game. And if he does, he's just a really tough cover. Like
And we spoke to Dan Toltzman about that. That's what they want from him this year.
They need him to be stretching the floor a little bit more. I don't think you're going to see it immediately. I think next year is going to be a little bit of a... It's going to be a year where they have to kind of figure out what kind of team they're going to be. There's a lot of new additions. They're going to have to find out what kind of a role Damari Carroll's going to have. They're going to have to find out what kind of a role Corey Joseph's going to have. Luis Scola likes to get his touches. I mentioned he's a little bit of a black hole on offense. When he touches that ball on the block, he likes to keep it. You've still got DeMar DeRozan, who's going to be playing for that contract. You've got Kyle Lowry, who's going to be looking to prove himself. There's not going to be as many touches. Fans are still going to be frustrated with the amount of touches that JV is going to get next year. But I think when we're going forward, when we're looking down 2-3 years from now, I think that, yes, JV will be one of the top two options on the team offensively. And, yeah, I think he'll rack up an all-star season.
And, you know, so much of a player's career and their numbers, their stature, all that kind of stuff, so much of it comes down to the role you're given and the situation you're put
in.
Right now, like you're saying, next year, probably will be a little more similar to what we saw last year. But 3-4 years from now, if he is put in that number two option spot, you know, who knows, like, he could be a 20 point per game guy. But when you look at someone else who the Raptors need to look at in terms of a contract extension, Terrence Ross, I think of the same thing. It so much comes down to situation and role, and he's a guy whose role seems to be diminishing over time,
and I wonder
how much that's going to impact the negotiations that the Raptors have apparently kind of started with him. I don't think they've really explored it deeply. So they have Valanciunas locked up, the other guy's Ross. What do you think they're going to do with Terrence Ross?
I mean, at this point, I think it's pretty clear that he's going to play out the next year. And then the Raptors will hope that a team doesn't throw offer sheet at him if he has a good season, which they probably would.
The Raptors needed to make a move. Masai Ujiri needed to make a move on Valanciunas, because if you let him hit the open market, it's going to be a feeding frenzy for a guy like that.
Right. So here's the issue, though.
Ross, that's not the case. I don't think.
Yeah, Ross right now, not the case. But next, if Ross has a productive season, like I said, you could see a team like, if you would have told me 2 years ago that somebody would throw $70 million at Enes Kanter, and I know that
new cap,
even still, that someone was going to throw that offer sheet at him, I would have told you were nuts. So you could say the same. You could almost make the case, because of Terrence Ross's upside, because of his intangibles, you could make the case that in some reality, this guy could take a step forward. But I think being buried behind Damari, it's going to be tougher for him to kind of carve out a niche. It's not going to be like last year where you have a guy that can't shoot in front of you like James Johnson.
Yeah.
It's going to be harder for him to get minutes. And in that time, he really is going to have to prove himself. The thing is with Terrence, is word is, and we had Bobby Marks on our station, former Nets GM, the other day, and he was saying that he thinks Terrence Ross's camp is looking somewhere north of $10 million a season when they were talking about an extension. So there's absolutely no chance that the Raptors are going to get a deal done like that at this point.
So when you hear something like that, I mean, do you feel like maybe that puts pressure on you wanting to sign a longish term deal for small money now, or are you willing to risk having him?
No, you take risk a step it. Forward you have to walk? Risk it. Listen, this is a guy who took another step back last year. He did not. We had another situation where in the playoffs he just wasn't very good. Last year he shot 37% from three, and he's been 23% from deep in the playoffs. That's just not a good sign. He still looks lost on defense. He gets lost in rotations. He still doesn't attack the basket or draw any fouls. There's too many holes in his game right now to be like, you know what, that upside, we're going to pay for that right now. And you know, he has shown that you don't really want to call out a guy too much for mentally because you don't really know what's going on in his head. But to me, to the observer, it seems like he can get down on himself and he's not the most confident guy at times, that he can lose that confidence in his shooting stroke.
I remember speaking to him like the first game that he was benched, taken out of the starting lineup. After that game, the following day, he was kind of bewildered. You know, he was really frustrated in the fact that he wasn't starting, really frustrated at the fact that he didn't know how many minutes he was going to be getting game to game. And you could see it really did affect him, you know, between his ears. And that's what that comes back to what I'm saying. So much of it comes down to your situation and having a role that you know that you're comfortable with, that you know what to expect. And I don't think he has that right now.
And he won't going forward. He's going to have to earn it. Exactly. He's going to have to carve it out, and the Raptors are ready to roll the dice on that. And honestly, you can't really fault them for that. If Terrence Ross, some reason, breaks out, or some team throws a qualifying offer thinking that he can be better and he shines somewhere else, you can't really blame Raptors management at this point because he has shown no reason to deserve $10 million.
It's a big year for Terrence Ross coming ahead. Big year for JV, big year for the whole team.
Big year for Canada basketball.
Big year for Canada basketball. I'm glad you mentioned that because we're gonna take a quick time out. But when we come back, we're going to talk Canada basketball. FIBA Americas are coming up. Woo! Canada looking to book their spot to the 2016 Olympics. Will it happen? We'll find out after this.
You're listening to
Free Association.
Hey, this is Kia Nurse, and you're listening to Free Association.
All right, welcome back to Free Association. Thanks to Kia Nurse for that. You know, I don't know how much you saw of the Pan Am Games or the FIBA Women's Qualifiers, but that was incredible to watch Kia take over those games and win two goals for Canada for the women's side.
Do you know why I didn't watch Kia in the Pan Am game?
What?
Because it wasn't on TV.
Yeah, that was a huge frustration.
I know, such an oversight. That was driving me nuts. That's stupid. Like, listen, I understand
and
they were trying to drive traffic.
It extended past basketball, too. I mean, the whole thing was...
No, exactly. A lot of people missed Pete Orr's slide in for Team Canada's baseball team, which was terrific. I actually caught that one. That was good. But yeah, no, Kia, she's the summer's breakout star. We love her. She's hopefully going to be on the show soon.
Yeah, she will be on the show soon. On the women's side, you know, they booked their ticket to Rio 2016. The men are looking to do the same this week. Right now, they're in the Tudo Marchand. I think that's how you say it.
Tudo
Marchand Continental Cup, Champions Cup, some tournament in Puerto Rico.
It's a tune-up.
It's a tune-up for the FIBA Americas coming up. Canada, you know, we're taping this on a Tuesday as always, and Canada's played two games so far. They're 2-0, and they've looked pretty damn good, JD. I don't know if you've seen these games either because they're not televised.
But... Haven't seen these games. Been following along.
Yeah.
My impression is that they basically blew a big lead in the first game but were able to overcome it thanks to an Andrew Wiggins dagger at the end of the game.
Exactly.
And that they absolutely routed Brazil last night thanks to a pretty solid team effort and another good performance by Anthony Bennett, who was one of the stars the Pan Am Games.
Yes. And he's just kind of keeping that role going. He really looks comfortable in that national team jersey. You know, going into this Canada FIBA action, you look at the Canada roster and you say, yeah, they got all these NBA players, but man, they're pretty inexperienced at this level, a really young team for the most part. But when you see these two games so far against Brazil and Argentina, what sticks out is that, I mean, this team is so friggin' athletic that it's hard for anybody to stop them. You know what I mean? Like, they're just overmatching guys. Wiggins, Bennett, Nicholson, Heslip shooting. His shooting has just been lights out as always.
Not just his though. If you look at this team as a whole, they all shoot. So even their bigs, like if you look at Nicholson can shoot, shooter. Bennett can shoot, Olynyk can shoot, Wiggins can shoot, Powell can shoot, Haslip can shoot. Like the list goes on and on and on. This is a group of guys that are pretty prime for the European or the international style of ball. Like they can spread the floor, they can run the floor. They're a young group, like you said, they're super athletic. I mean, you have to feel a little confident right now. I know that I'm not positive whether or not Brazil was at full strength. I know Pablo Prigioni didn't play in the Argentina game, and although they're saying he's not expected to be at the
Divas at this
point.
We all know what Pablo's capable of.
Hey, Pablo is one guy. If you see Leo Routon's Twitter account, it's all, hey, if Pablo shows up, look out, because he and Luis Scola know how to play that pick and roll together. They love each other. Hey, I'm just saying he's an upgrade at that spot, and you cannot diminish experience in international play. And that's the one thing that this group does not have when you look at a couple of the other countries like Argentina.
Exactly. And the other knock on the roster is the lack of size. You know, not having Tristan Thompson because of his contract talks might hurt. Kelly Olynyk injured. That could hurt.
Yep.
Does that worry you? Because there's some big dudes in the international game and some crafty kind of veteran bigs on teams like Argentina, even Dominican, Puerto Rico.
I mean, you have to be a little concerned. Am I as confident as if Kelly Olynyk was 100% healthy and whether or not if they had Tristan Thompson there? Of course not. Tristan Thompson would immediately be the team's best defender. He brings a lot of veteran savvy to a group that doesn't exactly have a ton of it. And yeah, Kelly's probably one of the top three, four most talented guys on that roster, I think, without a doubt. And so, of course, it concerns you. But like you said, I think that the national team program has more depth than it ever has.
Yes.
You're looking at guys that are stepping in here right now, and there's going to be other guys that are able to step in. So if this would have been years have passed and Canada would have had a player like Tristan Thompson and not been able to bring him, it would be over. C'est fini. Now it's
what
like,
that,
well, you have other guys. Now you have other guys. Olivier Hanlon would be really crushed by that statement. But now you have other guys like Nicholson, who I tweeted this out during the Pan Am Games, is no matter what his NBA career ends up being, he's always going to be a terrific international player.
Yeah, his game is just so tailor-made
He shines in there. So same thing with Anthony Bennett. And you know what? Let's quickly touch on Bennett, though, because how much are you reading into his success so far over the summer with Team Canada?
Your first instinct tells you, like, okay, exhibition games, international,
relax.
Pan Am, take it easy. But then I think to when we spoke to Milt Newton, the Timberwolves GM, he said that Bennett's problem wasn't anything to do with physical ability or anything like that. His problem was that mentally his confidence had been shot. He had kind of forgotten what made him the first overall pick, and when things didn't go well, he kind of put his head in the ground and just got really frustrated, and it impacted his game. I see this experience as a huge confidence builder for him. He's going to look at himself saying, I'm killing it out here. I'm going to take this to the NBA. Maybe I won't be dominating like I am now, but I've shown myself how good I am or how good I can be. So I think that's going to translate.
I think
to the
that's
NBA
spot season. On. The one thing I don't expect him ever to be a guy that we look at as he was the first overall pick in the draft and that was the right choice. I think that is gone.
Okay. Yeah.
What I do hope to see is that at the Pan Am games, especially because I haven't seen these first two Tuto Marchand games. Mm-hmm. But what I did notice at the Pan Am games that was probably the most encouraging thing was that he was putting the ball on the deck and he was not afraid to go at the rim. And I think that that is the most important thing for him to progress in his NBA career. He's always going to have some difficulties on the defensive end. He's going to be one of those guys that kind of frustrates you. He's a little too small to defend bigs. He's a little too club-footed, lead-footed to defend quicker guys. Yeah. That being said, his offensive ability is not, you can't question it. He can shoot the ball and he can attack the rim. He can run the floor. He needs to do those things and carry those things over the NBA. And he's done those things with Team Canada. He's taken a little bit of a lead role. And yes, I really do have a feeling, and maybe it's because I am a little biased. I think you are too. But I do have a little bit of a feeling that he's going to carry some of this in and he's going to get another NBA contract.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think he's going to make an all-star team, but I think he's going to definitely be improved. And you can see what made him that first overall pick. It's just like the force and the power.
Yeah.
At his size, you know, he explodes. He has a ton of speed. When he attacks the rim, it's like a Mack truck. It's unstoppable. It kind of reminds me of another UNLV guy, like Larry Johnson, like that kind of big frame. But once he's coming through the lane, you just can't stop him.
Yeah, you got a lot of those comparables coming out of school.
Yeah, and for good reason. You're kind of seeing it now in the international game. Real quick here, because we are going to speak to Marius Markevicius coming up. But I want to know, we talk about the depth on this team. There's a lot of guys who can swing a game here or there. If you had to pick one X factor for Canada at the upcoming FIBA Americas, Who are you going with?
Obviously, you're only as good as your best player, and their best player is Andrew Wiggins, so you could really make the case for him. But I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction. I'm going to go with Corey Joseph. He hasn't played in the first two tune-up games, didn't play at the Pan Ams, but I looked at the box score against that Argentina game where they almost blew it, 19 turnovers. I think that number is going to go way down with a veteran guy like Corey Joseph in there. We talked about the inexperience of the team. Corey Joseph's the most experienced member of Team Canada. I honestly view this as his team. He's the point guard. He's going to initiate the offense. He's the most experienced guy. This is Corey Joseph's team, and I expect him to show why the Raptors show much faith in him and really, really carry this team.
And I think it's important to note, like, when we say lack of experience, it's lack of experience at this level of international ball, because all these guys, Wiggins, Joseph, they've been playing for Canada their whole life.
Of course.
And dominating, might I add.
And, I mean, lack of experience, relative term, I guess you can say. Like, these guys have all played, you know, AAU ball. They've all played college ball. Like, they're experienced in that sense. A lot of them have NBA years under their belt. But I just look at behind Corey Joseph right now without Jamal Murray. And and I'll quickly touch on this too. But without him, without Jamal Murray now, you're looking at Phil Scrub, maybe Brady Heslop handling the ball a little bit. And I don't think we're going to see very much, if any, of Olivier Hanlon, especially at the FIBA qualifier. So,
shout out to a friend of the show, Phil Scrub. Looks like he has that backup spot locked
pretty
down.
Locked up right now. Yeah. Although that being said, I don't know how much that's going to translate, because they will have other guys like Heslop, who I think can handle the ball in a pinch. I think Stauskas, they'll probably ask to handle the ball maybe in a pinch. But yeah, a lot of this tournament's going to ride.
Stauskas has been slightly disappointing for me so far. It's so early in exhibition games, but I feel like he can make a big difference here. I haven't quite seen it yet.
Kind of need him to. But Back to Kojo. It's just a lot of this tournament success is going to be riding on his shoulders. I think if he has a really good tournament, they have a chance. And if he struggles, they're in trouble.
You know, if I have to go with one X factor, we saw on Monday night against Brazil, Dwight Powell led Canada in scoring with 18 points. He's a guy who kind of gets forgotten when you start listing off the names. But man, he's skilled. Another guy who, in the international game, with his size, speed, mobility,
he can shoot. We talked about the depth.
Yeah, he's a guy who's going to cause problems. You can play him 5 minutes. You can play him 25 minutes. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he swings another game down the line.
I think Dwight Powell is going to be the one guy from this tournament that Canadian basketball fans, especially ones that are more fringe, newer fans, are going to be like, wait, who's this guy? Where did he come from? And then all of a sudden he will be a target of people's attention heading into next NBA season. Just before we break here, I want to quickly touch on Jamal Murray, because
that's right,
he was fantastic. He was the story of the Pan Am Games when it comes to basketball, unless you look at Kia Nurse. I think they were basically 1A, 1B. It's shocking how much I think that this team is going to miss a kid that has yet to play a game in college.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, what is he, 19, 18?
Yeah, he's 18 years old.
And he was just dominating stretches of games in the Pan Am there. I mean, it's, again, we could talk about confidence with Bennett, and it's a huge thing for all these players. He just looked so comfortable. He knew exactly what he could do, and then he went out and did it. I mean, he was just, it was a revelation for people who had only heard his name and hadn't seen him play, because he's been doing that at all levels. But to see him do it for Canada en route to a medal, I mean, it was cool.
People got a taste of him internationally when it came to the Nike Hoop Summit, where he absolutely dominated.
But I don't think a lot of people see that, you know.
But yeah, exactly. But they're like, oh, okay, but that's against other kids that are other guys that are his age. He's playing against the pros, and you know, that's not a USA roster that was loaded with guys. But there were guys who played in the NBA. There are guys who played high level, all Div 1 college players. Like, this is a serious group of players, and he went in there and he won them that game. He was so poised. And that's the thing is, you mentioned it, you touched on it a little bit anyways, he was poised. Like, he looked like he belonged with those guys. He was a guy that wasn't afraid of the moment, who stepped up when they needed him. And I think Canada will miss that at the qualifiers, especially as a guy that would have stepped in behind Corey Joseph and eaten up some minutes.
And, you know, I can't help but think, we had Gary Joyce on, and he did that feature in Sportsnet Mag on Orangeville Prep.
Yep.
And he was saying how, you know, Thon Maker gets a lot of the attention there. And he wasn't so hot on Thon Maker's future as a star, but he said the guy to look out for is Jamal Murray, who's going to step into Kentucky and dominate next year. He's going to kill it for Canada. And we definitely saw hints of that.
There's no way Coach Calipari wasn't licking his lips like crazy.
Exactly. So listen, tons of talent for Canada. It's just a matter of them putting it together. Looks like they might.
Do they qualify?
I think they do. I really liked what they've surprised me. I didn't think they would look this comfortable so far.
I think they need to, because I think you need to get this group into your Andrew Wiggins' first Olympics.
Yeah.
Can't be 2020.
No.
That's why it's so important for this group to qualify.
Open, the window's open now. You got to dive through it.
That's what I mean. You can't throw away the prime of Canada's a generational talent like Wiggins, a generational group like this. They need to qualify. I think they will qualify. A lot riding on it. Confidence level high. Nerves. It's going to be tough. I'm going to have no fingernails after that tournament. There's no question about it.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to come back with Marius Markevicius.
More JV.
Talk about JV. Talk about the other Dream Team, Doc. This is Free Association. Remember also, you can find us on iTunes. Hit that subscribe button.
You better already be finding us.
Leave a review.
Right now.
We do post on sportsnet.ca, but we love it when you find us through iTunes. So just do that. Cool?
Sounds pretty cool.
All right. We'll be back in a second. Some come to life, passed away. Some come to make just one
moment. Whichever way your pleasure. Freedom. Let's go. Let's dance. Let's have a great time. And let's make threes in transition. Roll away.
This is Damari Carroll of the Toronto Raptors, and you're listening to Free Association. Franklin's tongue falls asleep,
like four lean hounds the lighthouse keep. All right, welcome back to Free Association. Thrilled to have on the line right now Marius Markevicius, director of the Other Dream Team. How are you, Marius?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
First and foremost, I got to say that we're really happy to have you on because both of us really, really love the film. I actually ended up rewatching it last night. It's just a terrific documentary. If people haven't seen it, you can go catch it on Netflix right now. Must watch for hoop junkies and honestly, just for history buffs in general. Excellent, excellent stuff. I got to ask you just quickly off the bat, what's your favorite part of the movie?
Ooh, that's tough.
I know.
That's a heavy question.
You know, it's hard. I think kind of the most fun, kind of entertaining part is the part where the guys talk about all the things that they used to smuggle.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That always got a big reaction. And it's odd because for me, like, growing up a Lithuanian-American kid and growing up in L.A., like, all of our family that used to come to visit me in the 80s, like, we would always give them gifts, and they would always, like, take home, like, a VCR or blue jeans or all these things, and they would sell them on those trips to kind of pay for their own trips and help support the family. So it wasn't that odd for me to hear those stories, but when I started telling other people and you know, trying to figure out if this was an interesting film in general to tell, like, people were fascinated by kind of that part of the lifestyle, which is kind of funny in the film, but it's actually, you know, it shows how difficult those times were and some of the wild things that people had to do. I mean, nobody could imagine, you know, Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan smuggling aspirin or blue jeans to help pay the bill. So,
yeah.
That was, you know, but there's so much. I mean, so those guys, you know, my heroes growing up, and so, you know, it's hard to figure out exactly the one specific favorite part.
That is an excellent part of the film.
JD's got a good one.
I love a couple of things in the film. One is that the first time I watched it, I didn't realize that Marshallonis was older until about halfway through the film when you're going away for the cutaways. I'm like, wait, he's that good looking at that age? He still looks that good? It was jarring to me. I was like, no, this can't be possible.
Good genes, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding, good genes. And the Chris Mullin quote about him is excellent too in the film. But I love when they flash to the Sabonis draft class. When Sabonis gets drafted, and there's the draft party in Portland, and there's the old lady, and she's just like, ridiculous, ridiculous. Yeah. And then there's the old man who's like, I can't spell it. I sure as hell can't pronounce it. Love that. That always gets me every time because it reminds me of, and this is the main reason we were having on today, of Jonas Valanciunas, because when he was drafted as a Toronto Raptor, us fans here in Toronto were pretty fresh off the Andrea Bargnani experiment. There was a lot of hesitation for people drafting a European-born player, especially considering people were upset that they had passed on guys like Brendan Knight. And JV was an unknown who people were kind of upset about. And we wanted to ask you a little bit, what was your introduction to Jonas Valanciunas?
Well, I was already in production on the film for over a year, I believe. And we originally, that storyline was actually not in the movie, interestingly enough. Huh. It was, you know, I was really making the movie about the 1992 team and you know, the Soviet times and kind of the history of Lithuanian basketball. But, you know, we started seeing on the radar this young kid. You know, he was like 17, I guess, at the time, and coming up the charts on the draft, you know, predictions. And, you know, he was on Lietuvos Rytas, the professional team. So I watched him play a few times. And me and my producing partner, John Weinbach, we both kind of simultaneously had the idea that, you know, this is something interesting. And we let's go, like, try to, you know, talk to this guy and see what he's all about. And I think the serendipity was at some point when we looked at information that he was born in 1992, actually the year of those Olympics that we were, you know, our whole story was leading up to, and there was something about that. They call, you know, those kids are called the Freedom Generation of mm-hmm. Lithuania, that were born essentially in the dawn of this new independence era, and he just seemed to be such a representation of that that we thought it would be an interesting storyline, but we really didn't know. We didn't know what would happen. You know, it was a year before the NBA draft, and you never know if someone's going to just fall off the charts or if they're going to rise to the number one pick or you don't know. So with documentaries, especially, a lot of times you're filming things as they unfold and the outcome is uncertain. And in this case, you know, it turned out really well for Jonas and for the film, I think, because,
no question,
you know,
he's a big part of it.
Rose. Yeah. And he got picked fifth and you know, I think that Toronto is a great team and great city, kind of, you know, international place. And I think, you know, even though he may have been a little unknown at that time, I think that it's a team that has, you know, accepts international players. And I think, you know, hopefully be his home there for a long time.
And you know, I'm glad you brought up the stuff about, you know, him being part of the quote unquote Freedom Generation. And I want to come back to that in a bit, but so you're spending all this time around him, you know, as you're making the doc and you're kind of seeing him mature a little bit. I just want to get a sense of what you picked up in terms of his character. You know, what's it like? What's he like as a guy when you're around him that much? And did that change it all over the process?
Yeah, it's really been an interesting, cool experience because we've stayed in touch and okay. stayed friends. And I mean, he was truly a kid. You know, he was 17 years old and kind of gangly and still developing his game. And well, he still, of course, still is developing his game on a different level now. But he was, you know, very, very humble kid and a little bit shy even, you know, when we did the interviews. And that's why we ended up doing them in Lithuanian at that time. You know, he spoke English, but I just wanted him to be more comfortable in the interviews. And so we did them in Lithuanian. And then we got the privilege of meeting his mother, who's an incredible lady, who actually may have, I think, stolen the thunder from
She really did.
Himself a little bit.
She's awesome.
Her ironing the shirt before the draft, just making sure every little crinkle is out of it, is terrific.
That was great. And yeah, she spoke very eloquently about, you know, the harder times that she went through and how her son now has these incredible opportunities. And of course she was quite nervous and scared about him going overseas and being so far away and the future being sort of uncertain about the draft and all that, but it all came together nicely. And you know, she's a great person and supported him, you know, so much. And I think, you know, they're very close and it was nice to meet both of them.
Yeah, it was a very, very good part of the film. She was a very strong presence, and as was he.
And in his life, too. I mean, it comes across.
Yeah, of course. The one thing I've been kind of curious about while watching this doc, and it was the expectations seem so high for him, especially in Lithuania. Even at the end, like you spoke about the Freedom Generation and JV being drafted fifth overall, he's basically, I would still say at this point, well, the embodiment of Lithuanian basketball in the NBA at this point. In terms of his development here, it's been more incremental than one big, huge leap. How is he perceived back in Lithuania right now in terms of his development?
Well, I think back there, you know, I mean, I'm in LA, but yeah. I do, you know, I follow the national team a lot, and the European Championships are coming up now in a couple of weeks, so it's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's interesting. It's the Lithuanian basketball tradition and coaching styles. They definitely nurture players slowly, and they make you kind of earn your spot, and there's no, you know, there's no superstar status. It's very egalitarian, and the minutes are very much divided, you know, evenly. They play, like, you know, they'll play 10 guys rotating continually. And so up till now in a lot of the international tournaments, like, you know, he's had to share a lot of minutes and hasn't, you know, they don't really have like a true focal point, but I think that the time has come where it's time to make him the focal point. And maybe this is my own opinion, so we'll see. I don't know. But I think he's now reached a level where he can be a more dominant force, and that they not only should rely on him, I think they need to rely on him because they're kind of weak at the point guard position. They have the great shooters, as always, outside shooters, and that I think if they can, you know, work a little bit inside-outside game and pick and rolls, be honest, that they'll have a lot more success.
And you're right, you know, when you watch that Lithuanian team play, the minute distribution is, like, incredibly even. But Raptors fans who probably tuned in wanting to see Valanciunas, I mean, they've seen him dominate in stretches there, so it's just a matter of kind of keeping him on the court more. And that's a theme in his NBA career as well. Again, so you touched on it early on, and I really want to come back to it, is the Freedom Generation and Jonas's role in that. I mean, he's almost kind of become, in a sense, and correct me if I'm wrong, like the face of that generation, the first new independent generation in Lithuania. And I've spoken to him about that, and he said, you know, as he got older, he became more and more aware of kind of his responsibility from that perspective. Is that something that you guys have spoken about, or how do you see it?
Well, it's definitely a big pressure. You know, I mean, there's, yeah, you know, that old generation set quite a standard from, you know, Sabonis and Marcelonis and a lot of those guys, even Ilgauskas and Šarūnas Jasikevičius, and, you know, these guys mm-hmm. have won all kinds of international accolades and medals and so forth. And so, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on it. I think he embraces it. You know, I think he's still only 23, but he's already, you know, becoming quite an ambassador for Lithuania. He was actually out here a few weeks ago in LA when the Special Olympics were here, and we went and visited cool. a Lithuanian delegation of athletes. We actually surprised them. They didn't know he was in town here because he was doing some training with Jack Sigma. I guess he was out here doing some training, but we ended up surprising the delegation, and, you know, you can just see by their reaction how big of a deal he is and how happy he made them to see them. And he was really generous to spend his time with them. And he's doing a lot of stuff like that back home. And so he's embraced the role, but it's a lot of pressure. You know, they demand victory, and this new generation, the team now is skewed a lot younger. And, you know, they haven't won a lot of medals. They haven't proved themselves. So each one of these tournaments, like this European Championship, I think it's a lot of pressure on them. But I'm excited. I think they have a chance to win a medal this year.
As a Seattle Supersonics fan, and I'm thrilled that he's working with Jack Sigma, a team that Marcelonis also played
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
We want to just quickly thank you, man, for the time today. It's excellent. And again, I know it's been a while since you put it out, but congratulations on the film.
You can
catch it on Netflix, and something that you touched on earlier with the smuggling scene. And I think that that's one of the real beauties of your film, is that it balances a serious time and a piece of history that some people, maybe especially that are my age, don't have as much information about, something that's very serious. And that's something that resonates with a lot of people, especially from your native country, and with humor, and it's light and it's easy to digest, but you also come away with it with a lot of education. And I think that's the real triumph of the film. And I just want to say again how much Dave and I both enjoyed it and having you on the show today.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks, Marius. All the best.
Okay. You too.
Have a great day, man.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
Hey, this is Patrick Patterson, and you're listening to Free Association.
Thanks again to Marius. That was really enjoyable. Enjoyed speaking with that guy. Again, please go watch that documentary. It's on Netflix. I guarantee you, even if you're not a basketball fan, which would be kind of strange if you're listening to this podcast at this point, but even still, very good for just about everybody.
I'm assuming most people listening to this have seen it, because it's been a few years, and it was a pretty big deal when it came out. I remember, you know, I went to the premiere here and all the Raptors were there, and it was highly publicized. So if you haven't seen it, shame on you. If you have seen it, go watch it again.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Listen, it's time for some housekeeping, and we got a fun game coming up.
Housekeeping?
Housekeeping? Have you seen the Chris Farley documentary, by the way?
No, I'm dying to see
it. It's great.
I'm really, really excited to see it.
Except for one thing.
I loved Chris Farley.
They barely, like, they spent 10 minutes on his drug use.
I was going to say, they glazed over Beverly Hills Ninja?
Nope.
Nope. Gave that all the time.
They gave it the time it deserved.
Okay, good.
They glazed over, what's the one when he died that he was filming with Matthew Perry?
Almost Heroes.
Almost Heroes. Yeah. They glazed over that.
It's underrated.
Is it?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You're watching Chris Farley, like, in pure junkie mode
it's
on screen.
It's an animal! Shoot it!
It's a great one. It's good, but you know the guy was a heavy drug addict, and they barely talked about it. So that was a bit disconcerting.
A
Mike Myers is great in it, though. I digress. I want to do a quick mailbag. We got a couple questions. I did like a Twitter sweep asking for your questions, and some people came through. So thanks for that.
Your hour with me is almost up, so you know, make it quick.
Well, I've never had more incentive to stretch this out. Okay, so. First question. Okay, first question comes from Roger. Roger asks, Vegas, I guess this isn't a question, this is a statement. Vegas has put out some odds for the season for the Raptors, and they show a regression in the standings. Do you agree with Las Vegas? JD, let me toss it to you. Do you think the Raptors will regress this year?
As a team, I think that they're going to be better. As the record, in terms of what that really is indicating, I mean, there's a very distinct possibility. We talked about this on the last pod. The Eastern Conference got a lot stronger.
And that's the thing.
And so, yeah, it's going to be a lot tougher. The division's going to be tougher. The Celtics are going to be a lot better. I think that the Raptors will actually be battling with the Celtics a little bit more than people expect for the Atlantic Division title. So, yeah, I would expect the Raptors to not hit their franchise. They will not break another franchise record in terms of win totals, but they will still be a playoff team. And I still predict they win the Atlantic.
So not really
a major regression.
I think they take the division. I could see where the Vegas odds are coming in because, you know, like you said, the rest of the East got stronger. And I think that's what it's about more than anything else. Next question comes from Jackie. DeMar DeRozan becomes a free agent next season. Are you willing to pay him the max? We're probably going to talk about this a lot more down the line.
Yep.
But
Initial thoughts, we differ.
I've said it before. When you look around the NBA, risk having him walk, it's going to be hard to replace that guy. So if he has another strong season, takes another step forward, I'd have no problem with it.
If he takes another step forward, if he can learn how to shoot the three, there's a lot of ifs.
Have you seen him this summer?
Yeah, he has been drilling. He's been killing it at the Drew League. What a shocker. Like he does every single summer. I'm not going to say right now that if it was today and the Raptors had to match a max, I would have to say no. I would say let the Jonas Valanciunas era begin as a top offensive option. So as of right now, no, but don't hold me to that. Things can always change. He's still a young guy, and he's improved every single season of his career.
Listen, I'm sure we're going to tackle that a lot more down the line. But speaking of max contracts, it's a nice segue into our new game that I'm really thrilled about. I got a shout out. This I originally saw this on Reddit. I'm trying to find the user's name. I can't read this.
Who cares? Don't shout him out. Just from Reddit. You know who you are, Reddit guy.
Yeah, some dude on Reddit with a name I can't say on the air. So the game is Max Trade Amnesty.
So basically Mary Boff Kill.
Mary Boff Kill, but with NBA players.
Ooh.
And Max Trade Amnesty. So it's pretty straightforward. We're going to name three players, and you have to decide who you're going to give a max contract to, who you are going to trade away, and who you're going to amnesty outright. So we'll do a few examples today, but I want you to hit us up. You can hit me up at Twitter at Dave Zarum, Zarum, JD Bunkus at JD Bunkus, or Dave.Zarum at SportsCentMagazine.com. We want your examples. We're going to play a more extended version of this in the future. But for right now, we mentioned DeRozan. So let's do one with DeRozan. How about DeMar DeRozan, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony? Max, trade, amnesty.
Wow.
You want to think on that for a second? You want me to go first?
I got this. I'm going to max Paul George.
Yeah.
Even with the leg injury, I think that you got to do it. He's the best on both ends of the floor.
He was a top five player before that happened.
Yeah.
And he looked pretty good coming
back.
Yeah,
there were some people that were even buzzing around MVP stuff, even though I thought it was a little bit ridiculous. So I'm going to max Paul George. I'm going to take that right out. Now it's a tough one. I have to amnesty
Melo. I'm
going to
max Paul George as well, by the way. So now it's, so sorry, you just said you're going to amnesty Melo?
I think I have to because I just think that with his contract, I'm not getting as much back in a trade. He's making so much more money that I think that it's really difficult to move that contract anywhere. So I have to amnesty him.
He also has years on DeRozan.
Yeah.
So that's going to hurt his trade value.
I got to trade DeRozan because I think I'm getting a little bit more back.
All right. Well, I wish I could argue with that, but I'm with you. I would max George, trade DeMar, and amnesty Melo.
Really good.
Okay, let's do one more.
Emil Delic looking at me behind the glass like, you're a genius. I agree.
So Jonas Valanciunas, we talked about him earlier.
Yes, we did.
Let's look at some like other big men in his draft class. Max trade amnesty. Valanciunas.
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
Enes Kanter. This one's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, amnesty Kanter. Boom.
Amnesty him right away.
Yeah, he's like a bit of a problem child in the locker room. I don't think that he's going to get any better defensively.
I really don't like his game at all.
I do. We disagreed on this when we talked about the trade deadline. I think that he's still right now a little bit more polished offensively than JV, and which is kind of saying a lot. He's a pretty rare big man on that end, but he's a little bit smaller. He's smaller than people think. He's smaller than JV. I'm going to amnesty him right away. He's making $70 million, making more money than JV. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
So you got a max, making better cap room. Max or trade one of Tristan Thompson and Jonas Valanciunas. And this is actually a little tougher than that. I think the first instinct is, you max Thompson?
Yeah.
We just saw what he did in the finals. So that's JV. It.
So honestly, I think JV has a higher ceiling than Tristan Thompson because of the offensive ability. But I got to max Tristan Thompson because what I've seen from him is a guy who was a second best player on a finals team that went deep against a very, very talented Warriors team. So unfortunately, I have to trade JV again. I think I can get good pieces for that contract because the Raptors signed him to such a favorable deal. I'm getting things back for JV.
I'm going to go off the board here. I don't know why I didn't mention Nick Vucevic, another big guy from that draft class.
Oh, I'm just going to break the rules and do my own thing.
If we're looking at that draft class, Vucevic is the best big man in that draft class. Max contract, all-star this year. I'm just throwing that out there.
You have two assets to trade now.
There you go.
Well, is there anything else?
That's all I got.
Oh, that's all? Okay. This was long. It was fun, though.
Send your max trade amnesty candidates to us, and we'll break them down. Let us know how you break it down. Remember, Free Association is on iTunes. We're out every Tuesday. Hit subscribe. Leave some comments. Check us out on sportsnet.ca. Hit us up on the social medias. And have a good day, everybody.
Shout out Lance Kennedy, who watched the entire show today. He loved it. Look at him raising his hands. Woo, Lance.
Big shout out to Lance.
My partner in crime on Brady and Walker.
There you go. Thanks, Lance. Thanks, Emil. Thanks, JD. You were listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
Bye.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.